Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. Thank you for joining us today, August 5th. You heard it right in the news beforehand. It is Tucson Primary Election Day. So remember, the purpose of the engagement hours is to encourage each and every one of you to get involved. We're a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. And one of those most sacred rights is our right to vote. It's something I don't think we do well enough in this country. I think there are segments of our population that doesn't get heard because they don't participate at the ballot box. And I'll point no further than the CD7 primary elections. So Matt, big day today. As you mentioned, it's a mail-in only vote. Therefore, there's four places you can now go drop it off. If you have one of those questionable ballots that were sent to you and you need to get a new one, this is one of those. Those are one of the four places you can go to get those.
The city says that they've contacted everybody affected. There were 358, I guess, after it was all said and done. They've contacted all affected, but they did tell you that if you bring your if you have the incorrect ballot, you bring it to one of those locations that we just read.
And it's an important. There's going to be a lot of discussions today. We're going to be talking about RTA with Project Blue with our two guests today, Blake Morlock from the Tucson Sentinel, as well as the second hour from 8 to 9. We're going to have Mayor John Post from the town of Marana.
All right.
And he's got a lot of opinions, and obviously as a sitting member of the RTA board, he's got his take, and Marana's one of those areas that's growing. But it's really important if you are considering a change in the city of Tucson, or if you're not, if you like what's going on, you need to have your voice heard. And in the city of Tucson, because of the general election being at large, in other words, the entire city gets to vote for everybody, the most important elections quite often are these primaries. So I know there are two Republican candidates. They're going to get to have victory celebrations tonight. But in wards 3, 5, and 6, the election of that Democratic candidate is critical. And there are choices this year. So I encourage everybody to get out there. We've had Jesse Lugo on the show. He's a longtime friend of KVOI, as well as we've had Leighton Rockefeller Jr. on the show to give their positions and how they're taken. So strongly encourage if you're not ready to go out and vote. Otherwise, we may have a lot more like we had last night.
Yep. And you're, of course, speaking of the public forum, I'm using the word air quote, the information session for Project Blue.
Project Blue was an information session. It's really interesting. It was more than a yelling session. It was absolutely disruptful. It was not a good representation of our community. I thought the city itself on that one just let it go. I won't say they encouraged it, I mean, other than having the event, but there were, you know, some of the give and take between the moderator and the folks in the audience just made it worse. And it was totally disrespectful of any semblance of it. And it's all in the name. And I've heard this from people inside the city. Well, it's their First Amendment rights. So for those of you who don't know what Matt and I are talking about, because we've watched some of it and listening, last night was the third information session for Project Blue. The city, in the name of wanting to get as much information out as possible, held three information centers. The first one was out at Micah Mountain on the east side. Nikki Lee asked for that one out in her region, since that's where Project Blue is going to go. It was bad, but nothing as bad as last night. Other than one of my employees actually got punched on the way out of the Micah Mountain one. He just got hit in the back or something. He said, "Let it go," because somebody knew he was a supporter of Project Blue. He was there, you know, speaking about it.
It's called assault, I believe.
Yes, I believe it is. They did have 30 police officers there, and I don't know how many police officers were there last night. But I'll give the city credit. The second informational one was purely 100% online. There was nobody in person. So guess what? You actually got to hear the information that was being presented both by the Beal team and those behind and supportive of Project Blue, and you got to hear the questions that were asked by the citizens and actually listen to the answer instead of just yelling. So I thought the one that was last Thursday was very informational for people who did not or were not close and wanted to learn about it. But the first one and the third one, if you went there to learn anything, you got nothing. Last night, I think, Matt, they had almost 1,000 folks in the TCC.
Looks like every bit of it, yeah.
And if you listen to the presentations, I can tell you presentations were given. They obviously decided they were not going to stop talking, because if they talk...
I think that's, by the way, that's good, because they can say, we gave you the presentation, but you all chose not to listen to it.
And the problem I've got with it, though, Matt, still comes down to, it's nobody's right to shout down that thing. Last I checked, right, the city of Tucson were holding these for the citizens.
Yep.
Public hearings. They may not be an official mayor and council public hearing,
yeah,
where they have to, by law, have a hearing. But this was a public information,
sure,
session.
Yep.
And all I've been hearing is, well, it's our First Amendment right. We, yeah, can do that. There's
totally
no-
agree. I think, you know, I think perhaps... what they could have done was an unstaffed presentation. What I'm trying to say is, like, do the presentation and tape it and then just present it. And then everybody walks in, and then maybe make the 2 hours a public exchange, because that's what they were, that the people were there to vent. And I am not defending them, just so you're clear, just so we're clear. I'm not defending the way that they acted and disrupted. It was very disruptive behavior. But I think, you know, reading the room, I think they probably maybe should have allocated less time to the presentation and more time just to let people vent.
I actually would have been fine. I think doing the presentations was what made our community look ridiculous.
Yeah.
I got several text messages last night. And yes, I know the organization I represents business CEOs and business leaders in this community. But here's the fact. There was at least 3 people that reached out and said, I've been involved in controversial economic development efforts for decades, and I've never seen a community come across so poorly. I am shocked that Beal hasn't just wrapped it up and said, see ya, we're out of here. And I know that's what those people, I know that those that are there screeching, and it was screeching, it was yelling.
Yeah, it was.
It was
totally disruptive.
It was shouting them down. But by having... forcing Kerry Sylvan, the folks from Beal, from TEP, to go through those presentations when nobody was paying attention, I think, to your point, it was a waste of time. You already did the online one that gave everything the opportunity. So just call it what it is and open it up for questions right from the beginning. But the problem that I've got is people fall on our First Amendment rights all the time. And our government can't restrict anything we want to say. However, there's a whole bunch of clauses that are in there, not clauses in the actual language of the amendment, but rulings that have come out of the courts that show you can restrict or kick people out of meetings if they are interrupting or denying others their right to make a statement or to hear. There's actually a thing referred to as the heckler's veto. That's the First Amendment prevents the government or anyone else from suppressing speech simply because others don't like it. This is known as the heckler's veto. But it also means the heckler cannot suppress the speech of others who are trying to talk. We've lost this common ground of citizens, of being citizens, of being respectful to people. But to me, Matt, this goes way beyond that. What we saw last night is what I've talked about several times, and some people don't like to hear it. Populism has taken over political parties. Last night, the Democratic Party apparently actually officially voted to oppose Project Blue. So we'll see if the party's now going to turn up that. But what I'm saying by populism has taken over our parties, it's maybe not taken over our parties, it's become mainstream. It doesn't matter. If you are at a more conservative Republican-leaning event or a more progressive Democrat-leaning event, shouting down and refusing to listen to what other people want to say has become the norm. And it's being encouraged, because there's no way that we can't say that some things during the campaigns were encouraged by the candidates to have people shouting down the opposition or shouting down the opponents. But the city, by doing an event like this, and sitting there and not saying anything, I really thought at the first one when Tim Tamir stood up and said, listen, if this keeps up, this is going to be a really short meeting. Mm-hmm. But it had no teeth, no backbone.
Mm-hmm.
And to Tim's defense, he's got bosses. And he probably knew his parameters on when he could shut a meeting down or not. But instead, we had a little bit of heckling. That just encouraged even more last night.
It sure did.
Last night was ridiculous. And I'll the whoever was doing the moderating of it wasn't Tim Tamir this time. I believe it was
Andy Squire.
Yeah, Andy Squire.
Yeah.
There were times he made a couple comments back at them for their comments that they had said, you know,
you know the funniest
you're
one?
Disgusting or you're, you know, that's,
you know, the funniest one I heard, not to make light of it, but when he said, hey, I think it was Andy who said it. And I thought, well played, dude. Hey, this is Tucson. Remember, we're the city of Be Kind, which you know, basically just set them all off because he threw that one back in their face. But no, this is, I'm sorry, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but this is what the political powers in charge have created.
Absolutely.
The protest environment, we're going to shout down a mine, we're going to shout down a university, we're going to shout down this, we're going to shout down that. They created it, now it was turned against them. So, you know, the thing about the misplaced anger here is the people from Beale, okay, and the bureaucrats that were sitting there, they're not the ones approving this. The people in the room need to make themselves heard to is the city council. So this is where you write letters or emails or call, leave messages saying, I'm your constituent in Ward X, or I'm a citizen of Tucson and I vehemently approve. If this is what you feel, they're the decision makers. The people that you're yelling at, they've been tasked
exactly.
by their customer, Amazon, to make this thing.
Why would any company want to come to Tucson after seeing that?
This is Ted,
I know, you're opening up a decades old,
going back to Motorola, in my frame of reference, you're opening up a decades old kind of Grand Canyon University, IBM, well, I don't know about IBM, but yeah, you're just opening up a decades old thing with me. So.
I've had several of the original founders of SALC, which was founded in 1997, reach out to me and go, we got to get involved. We got to keep pushing. This is Motorola all over again. This will set us back decades. And, you know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. The one thing Beale said at the end when somebody finally said, what happens if the city and council decide this doesn't fit for them?
Yeah.
They said, well, we fully understand that this region is going to need data centers for the amount of cloud services that we use in this region. The proximity of the data centers is what keeps it going.
Sure.
You're going to need it. We'll look outside the city of Tucson.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they will. I don't know if they'll leave, but I know there's multiple more data centers. I've got a feeling when we talk with Mayor Post today, we're going to hear about some activity up in Marana. But the part that kills me is to that point, write your elected officials, and then if they don't do what you want them to do, change it at the ballot
box. They're the decision makers, and there were calls last night to, hey, can we put this on the ballot and let the people vote for it?
But we don't want to. You're representative. You represent the citizens. Yeah. We don't want to take everything to the ballot box. What's going on in Axion at Scottsdale is ridiculous.
All the propositions that happen at the state, where you know things get log jammed in the legislature, so they say, we'll refer it, and then you got a 20-page ballot.
It's crazy. So I know Blake Morlock's called in. Blake Morlock with the Tucson Sentinel will join us when we get back. One thing I ask you is look into the First Amendment. First Amendment doesn't give you the right to impede other people's First Amendments either, specifically at public hearings. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back.
I didn't even pick that title on purpose. It just was there and I grabbed it.
Well, you know, sometimes you go back to the 80s and everything just becomes appropriate.
It's going to get better, Ted.
I'm trying to think. Was Motorola in the 80s? I think it was. So it's
1970.
There it is. So it's all the way 70s. Oh, yeah. Man. Well, that was long before I even had heard of a town called Tucson and how to pronounce it and everything. So you're listening to The Morning Voice 5 days a week, five different hosts, five different topics. Always got a little bit of politics sprinkled in there, I think, on almost every one of those days. We hope you join us every morning during your drive time and listen in, and we'll try to keep you informed. I'm extremely glad to have Blake Morlock back. I think, Blake, this is your third time on coming on the radio with me. Blake,
yes, it is.
It's good to have you back. I appreciate your writing in the Tucson Sentinel. You are one of those, and I learned it in the first time you were on the show. You're one of those writers and folks that are involved in the media that you'll surprise everybody once in a while and take different positions on issues that some people go, who's this? You know, instead of what they've come to expect. But that, I think, is what makes you such a powerful writer. So again, thanks for joining us a third time on the show. You're going to be a regular because I do appreciate these conversations.
Oh, it's fun to be here.
So is there anything to talk about in this region right now?
No, there's nothing really. I really don't know why you called, actually.
Well,
I understand last night was incredibly quiet.
quiet was an underestimation. Now did you tune in and watch it, or did you get out there?
You know what? I've been through, I get the basic gist of it. Data center's bad. I don't know where call center came from.
For a while that was the movement in Tucson. So
yeah, but it was just funny because I heard a little bit of your the preceding conversation, and the only thing I would add to it is that, like, people who are mad show up. People who are more or less okay with something don't, and that's just been my experience going back doing this now for 25, 30 years is that whenever people are angry, they show up. But yeah, the new thing about just shouting everybody down, and it's like, that's not helpful. That new trend just isn't. but at the same time, that's what you're going to get with something like the public hearing on Project Blue, which is, I think, getting a lot of, I would also add, I think there's a lot of AI angst mixed in with this and a lot of tech angst. Like these people are coming for our job. These are some of the people who are doing really well as I'm doing worse and worse. You know, so you got a little bit of that, that in play too, plus water.
And Blake, I think you're right on that, but that's the irony of it. People want the technologies. Every single person in that room had a phone. Guarantee it.
Yep.
Every single one of them.
Yep.
But they don't want what's required to continue to support this technological growth. And I've said on the air that myself and SLC were supporters of Project Blue because of the opportunity it brings to Tucson. We have not brought business and economic development. So we can talk. There's so many things we'll talk about. RTA is why I brought you on, but we'll save that for later because we're kind of here now. But what I don't understand is that kind of environment last night. What did the city expect? Did the city learn? Yeah. Was there anything anybody really learned last night, either from the speakers or from the people there?
No. Maybe a little, but people were mad and they showed up to be mad, and they weren't. I remember Gabby Giffords stumbled into something like this when she first got elected. It was a movable checkpoint, and the Border Patrol wanted it to be a fixed spot, I believe, and Jim Colby kept wanting it to be moved. And this was causing all sorts of trouble in Sarita and Green Valley. People didn't
I remember
like
that one now.
Yeah, when it was up north of them, because then it was like, I'm not in Mexico, I'm in the United States. So it caused a lot of angst. She jumped in the middle of it, held a public meeting, and got berated for 2 hours. And I was like, that is what was going to happen. People were going to show up and show their frustrations, and you're not going to get credit for like hearing them out necessarily, and they're not going to you're not going to change minds. They're not there to be like, this is a presentation. You know, I get to learn about, you know, Paleolithic cultures. Oh, this will be interesting. I'll be smarter when I leave. It isn't that. It's something completely different. And it's just, I was like, oh man, Gabby, what are you doing?
listen, this stuff gives us lots to talk about on the radio. But my question is, why do our elected officials, and you are seeing it on both sides, think that these are good environments? I mean, I understand that the first one, they didn't want to remove any of people that were being disruptive. I mean, you remove a handful of people being disruptive, guess what? Everybody else falls in line. A public hearing is supposed to be have a sense of orderly. I truly believe strongly that the First Amendment rights do not give those people any the opportunity to do what they did, because you're denying others their First Amendment rights. We lose that thought. And it's mm-hmm. just as a whole in our society, I think it's harming our ability to have good and give and take.
Well, yeah, God knows that's taken it on the chin the last, and I think the internet or social media has a lot to do with that too. It's just kind of driven us into these different silos where I am probably not a big Trump supporter, if people could imagine such a thing, but like I stopped arguing online. Now when I have conversations in person, it's a completely different thing. When I have back and forth with Trump supporters, it's practically friendly.
And that's what we
walk away and we're like, see you later.
And Blake, that's what we need more of, and we'll have that when we come back after the bottom of the hour. You're listening to 10:30 okay. The Voice, Trusted News and Talk. Sorry about the quick step. Welcome back. You're listening to the Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely behind the glass, making some incredible contributions to the show, as well as keeping me on time and on target. So I've got with me right now Blake Morlock, a award-winning publicist and the author of What the Devil Won't Tell You. So I didn't ask you last time, but how did you come up with that as the title of your article or your segment in the Tucson Sentinel?
Oh, it's a silly story. I was thinking about a title and I came up with a couple that I just didn't like. I was thinking about doing it originally as a blog, and I had way back when I had it in my head, I might want to be a songwriter. And I wrote a song in college called What the Devil Won't Tell You.
Well, I don't know if we want to go having you sing that or anything on the air, but maybe you know,
probably
if we
not.
If it ever gets slow, we can go
writer.
To that.
Yeah. Songwriter.
Well, I'll tell you, it's an award-winning column that you've got with the Tucson Sentinel. And before we get into the RTA, how can people support the Tucson Sentinel and all the work of the independent writers that publish in the Sentinel?
Well, you can go to www.tucsonsentinel.com, and believe you me, the first thing that comes up is a way to support us. And you just click on that, and we have different levels of support from that give you different packages. And it's just that easy. Just go to our URL, and Dylan Smith, our editor and publisher, has it set up so that it's very easy to support local journalism, local independent journalism.
Local independent journalism is important in our region. You do get a lot of different voices and a lot of different ideas. Now, the article that, I mean, we talk every once in a while, and I had reached out to you when I saw the RTAI's 10-year sales tax extension for road construction. It actually got a lot of attention from a lot of different people because you kind of laid out what is going on in a very straightforward move within the RTA. So we've talked about it. Folks who followed the RTA, and I'm a board member on the RTA, know I'm still in favor of the 20-year plan with a 20-year tax, because it ensures that whether your project's in the first half or the second half, we've committed money to get it done, so you can vote across those years. But you made a lot of good cases for why a 10-year tax might just work. You want to detail some of those?
Sure. Basically, the idea behind the 10-year tax is that we don't know what changes in traffic patterns, in commercial activity, in residential activity, land use densities that we're going to face. And frankly, the more I think about it, you know, we were talking about tech before. Why are we making any plans long term when we don't know what driverless cars are going to do? And they're coming. I mean, they've kind of been a joke for a while. They're like, fusion reactors. They're always 20 years away, and they've been 20 years away for about 60 years. But driverless cars are going to be coming. What's going to happen when we have, what effect will they have on transportation patterns? What about things like, you know, AI? We don't know what effect that's going to have on the workplace, what effect that's going to have on just basic transportation planning. So it might be, rather than doing it, coming back for a complete rewrite of, although I guess we kind of would have to do that anyway, but like just scheduling in, like now we have to go back to the voters after 10 years and say, we want to make these changes because we probably are going to want to make some changes. We have to make them right now to RTA1.
Exactly. That is a true statement right there. And that's one of the questions I think the voters will face, hopefully in March, will be the need to acknowledge the changes in RTA1.
And it isn't necessarily a bad thing that you're going back and making changes, because, you know, Amazon came up. Well, we were talking about Project Blue. Don't know what one has to do with the other officially, but you know, Amazon came on and brick and mortar retail isn't the same. Zoom came up. People aren't necessarily commuting to work. They're not, you know, homes aren't necessarily generating 10 vehicle trips per day like they used to. So that's creating different traffic patterns and different needs, different stresses. We don't know what development's going to happen where. So that sort of thing. That's my big argument for just let's only do the 10 years and then we'll finish RTA 1. We'll do the other stuff, bring in some more regional money, some HERF money, and then go back. I had Europe. I was like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah.
10-year tax. That sounds. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, well, that could actually work. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but I also get the sense that, like, Ortega, when he came in with a fresh set of eyes, looked at this and said, the 20-year plan isn't really ready to go.
Well, I think I think that's part of the challenge. In your article, I what you just pointed out there, you talked a little bit about Amazon and Zoom and Skype and the fact that back then in 2006, it's hard to believe that in 20 years so much has changed in society, but even in the way we get around. You didn't have GPS maps in your cars. You had to know the streets.
Yeah.
A whole lot has changed in 20 years. And a lot more, I think, potentially will change in the next 20 years.
Well, you know, what's funny is we tend to have this kind of recency bias about our change. But I go back and look at the life that I had in like the mid-1970s and go back to the 1950s. And I would argue that change was bigger. From like 55 to 75. So these changes are pretty constant and they always happen. So it's not a unique event, this level of change. And I think you're right. I think we're going to have more of it as time progresses.
Yeah. The other thing I appreciated, Blake, is I thought you did one of the better jobs I've seen people of lay out where we are. We've heard so much about RTA 1 not being complete, but the fact of the matter is we did not bring in the revenues that were forecast, not even close. And you laid that out in your article on why that's the only time I'd seen somebody
really
kind of say, let's not stop moving on, let's move on, and we'll complete what we need to. But there is a reason that we're not done.
Yeah, and it was, and I will just go back to the statistic, which is that the city of Tucson, after 2007, did not return to 2007 sales tax revenues, nominal dollars, not adjusted dollars, just straight up revenues until 2017. Right. So
right.
There was a massive hole blown in sales tax revenues. Because of bankers in New York.
Yeah.
Right? And these are exigent circumstances. But then he also got hit coming out of COVID with exploding costs. So the little money that you did have didn't go as far.
That's...
And again, these are other things that can happen over the course of 20 years that might require change. And just forcing that that new election, because you could see, nobody really wanted to do this new, like, go back for the changes for the RTA 1 project. So it was like, do we really have to? Can we try to just kind of squeeze them in there and get them done and see? It was like nobody really wanted to do that for good reasons. An election is a big deal. But this kind of forces the city to call election and come up with and course correct.
Yeah, and course corrections are going to be critical, Blake. I completely agree with you that on that front. We're going to need to take a look at it. And the other reason revenues fell so short that nobody's taken a look at, when the population growth was estimated from 2005 to 2026, we were supposed to be a community of about 1.4 million people. Well, guess what? We're not even close. And that's direct into the sales tax. You cut, almost 20% of the population not there, and you're going deep. Matt, you got some you want to
play? Ted, you guys, Ted, you've got a sort of a statewide view of things. Blake, I don't know what you've encountered. Are there any other regional transportation authorities, like the one in Maricopa County, that have gotten to a point where they had to make a course, let's call it a course correction, or come up to the point where they realize they didn't have enough to finish what was promised to voters? And how was that handled in other regions? Do you guys know of any other?
I have an example for you from Flagstaff, which was really kind of an embarrassing one, where they forgot to calculate inflation.
That'd be problematic.
They just flat ran out of money. And they had trouble getting anything for a while. So like that's one where I saw that happened. There was another, as far as course corrections, I remember there was, when I first got to back to Tucson, there was a road bond that was passed back in like the early 90s, late 80s maybe. And part of it was a 22nd, bunch of work on 22nd that they decided not to do. And Dan Ekstrom and Raul Grijalva diverted that into neighborhood streets in their districts, and the city just kind of was not happy. About that. So
that's a perfect example of why the regional the RTA was written so specific that we have to go into details, and then it stuck. Matt, to your question, here's the difference.
Who did the $1.4 million person forecast for population? Like
That was the University of Arizona.
You missed that one.
I have another example though, okay, which I think is kind of appropriate here, but it's not transportation. It's Rio Nuevo. Remember when Rio Nuevo was passed, we were supposed to have a cultural center out on the west side. We were going to have a sea aquarium and a whole bunch of things.
I'd never heard about the sea aquarium.
That was the big one, Ted. May have been before your time.
Yeah.
They had a huge guiding board or whatever that was doing a lot of preliminary work for that. Yeah, you're right, Blake.
Yeah. We were supposed to have all that stuff. And the people voted for Rio Nuevo, but were they voting for, were they going over the specs for each project, the engineering specs, and saying, I want this, or were they really saying, make downtown better?
Right. Like we trust you?
Downtown is better. Now it took, talk about tumult.
Oh yeah.
It was a rocky road, but Fletcher McCusker came on, and the one great thing that the legislature did was put him in charge, and we got it. We have it downtown.
It's actually a little scary, because what the legislature did is they took all the controlling entities of naming the leadership out of the city of Tucson. They said it's failing. So that's the only reason the legislature reauthorized Rio Nuevo's taxing authority. Otherwise, we wouldn't have it. So we're going to cut to a break now. I do have an answer for Matt's question. And when we come back, Blake, I'm going to ask you, what are the issues other than maybe Project Blue and RTA are on your radar for what you're looking about, maybe for your next articles. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. That's been the voice of Blake Morlock. Stay with us. We've got another short segment when we come back.
If you're feeling like a number, 1030 might be a good number. 1030 The Voice, go to Facebook and you can follow along live with us there, or 1030 The Voice on YouTube if you'd like to follow along with the show and see your voice there.
And welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice, Matt Neely behind the glass. Blake Morlock is my guest this morning with the Tucson Sentinel, What the Devil Won't Tell You. So we little follow-up on the RTA, Blake, and we've probably only got about 4 minutes, so this is going to be tight. But Maricopa's Regional Transportation Authority, Matt, is completely different than ours, and they actually go, everything goes into a pot, so it's really easy for them to change it. Ours was written very specific, and that's why it has to go to the voters and others. But you said you had a question for Blake on his take on the HERF.
I did read the column, Blake, and interesting, concepts he threw out there. But the one about the HERF, my recollection was that Pima County uses their HERF money to fund their transportation department overhead. They don't use it actually for roads. At least that was my impression from Allie Miller, Joanne DiFilippo. That's my recollection there. Unless something has changed, then they kind of budget other money for the road repairs. But HERF in Pima County, at Pima County, not Tucson or any of the other entities.
And that is different than RTA money. We get money the HERF as well.
But Blake had brought up, reprogramming some HERF money. That was the only thought I had on that particular concept.
Cost allocation, you're getting some HERF money, because I know they do get HERF money that they use for projects. I've seen the contracts come by, but you do get to use some of it for overhead to, like with U of A grants, like you need to build the lab and keep the lights on, sort of thing. So I don't know. I'm not an expert in that field. I will defer to other people, or I will look it up for next time I'm on.
there is PAG, or there is federal and state dollars that also come to PAG RTA. And in the article, when you hear Michael Ortega talk about, that's the dollars he's talking about using. And yeah. I think the reason I don't like the fact that we may take some of them, like the Marana projects, we'll talk with Mayor Post about this, and move them out of the plan and say we're going to use the regional money that comes to us. But the point you made in the article that says they have to be, any regional money that comes from the state and the feds has to be used on state routes or interstates, is true. So that's why I think Michael wants to move one of the interchanges up in Marana into the regional funds. But that
can do other things. Yeah. Though. You can get a little bit creative if you were to say, like, look, I'm like Oro Valley and Pima County, we'll take over the maintenance of that stretch of North Oracle, which is a highway. But in return, you pay to widen Speedway. I've seen that happen before. Turnbacks in exchange for investment elsewhere, right? So some sort of deal.
Yes and no. As the state representative on the board at the state, anything that's done on Oracle has to be approved by the state. That has to come through us, through the State Transportation Board. But to your point, other RTA programs that are not on state highways, you can use municipal money. And for, if there's overruns, a lot of it is supposed to be municipal money. So there's a long way to go. So, Blake, we've got 1 minute left. I just want to know, what are you looking at right now for your next article?
In addition to the RTA and Project Blue, which is a new one, I got one for your people, which is look for the city trying to buy TEP. Which is maybe, I think, one of the dumbest ideas. The city doesn't know how to run an electric utility. City knows how to run a water utility. And I just think it, but they seem to be pressing forward right now, at least with that idea. So, and they may have to condemn TEP, which I'm sure TEP would be great with.
Oh, God. Well, I'll tell you, Blake, we agree on that topic. I appreciate you coming on with me today. I'm definitely going to be reaching out and bringing you on again, because I thoroughly enjoy our conversations. And one of these days, we got to get you back down in studio.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, Blake. Thank you for your time. And always, you know how to get a hold of me if you've got any questions.
I sure do, Ted. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Blake. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk.
And we got coming up next, Ted.
We have Mayor John Post from Marana. Now, he may be fighting those traffic on the
yeah, there
the
is
freeways.
Some, yeah, coming so, in on I-10.
So it may be just
Twin
us
Peaks
talking
to,
for a couple
Sunset
minutes.
Links.
He'll be here any minute, and he's got a lot to talk about because Marana is still booming.
Good conversation with Blake today, by the way.
Oh, that Excellent. Was great. It's been a great show so far. I hope you stick with us. Good morning and welcome back. I hope you were with us for the first hour. You got to hear a great interview with Blake Morlock of the Tucson Sentinel, as well as a little opening to the show of Matt and I talking about last night's informational session. Yes, I use the air quotes there on Project Blue. So appreciate you turning in to the Morning Voice 5 days a week, five different hosts. Tomorrow, Grant Kruger will be on with Food for Thought. He's always got a good blend.
Yeah,
of...
and Ed Ackerley will be sitting in for Grant tomorrow. And I'm trying to think now, but one of his guests is going to be Karen Taylor Robeson.
That will be outstanding. I know there was an event last week hosting Andy Biggs at the other Republican, so far announced Republican candidate for governor, and Karen Taylor Robeson.
I'll get the rest of them here. I'm just trying to blank. But you know, I've got the rest of them as well. But anyway, go ahead. I'll come back.
No, it was a good conversation on RTA Next. Mayor Post has found out another one of the reasons we need RTA Next, and that is that the traffic can get pretty heavy on I-10 throughout the day, especially once we get east of I-19. But I think he also faces it a little up front. So it'll be a great conversation. A lot to talk to Mayor Post about. This will be his first time on the Morning Voice with me since he's become the mayor.
Yeah, and then tomorrow also, I just found it, Ed's going to have Chris Ackerley on, and they're going to be breaking down the election results.
Oh, so it's going to be Ackerley.
Ackerley.
So the question
It'll
is,
be an AA meeting.
What quality of election results will there be tomorrow?
Well, I guess we're going to find out.
In theory, this is a by mail election, so they should have everything primed and ready to go. The majority of the ballots have already been turned in, and hopefully tomorrow morning they have announced that there won't, or at least the Daily Star, because it's now being printed in Las Vegas, has said they won't have the up-to-date results or much results, if any, tomorrow morning, as this will be the first test of how the Star will work now that it's being printed in Las Vegas versus in Phoenix. And we'll see what kind of results, but we'll all be standing by the TV to see the ward elections inside the city of Tucson is incredibly important. And so if you are a voter and if you still have your primary ballot, please turn out. Primary elections are historically low. I mean, when you have people do the assessment, you're talking about less than 12% of the voters actually make the selections for the majority of the seats, both locally and at the state level of government. That's one of the challenges in the city of Tucson. All the elections are done at large in the general. So the tendency is if there's seven Democrats, they get elected to the mayor and council. However, you know, Steve Kasachek ran as a Republican and beat Nina Trasoff back in the right around 2010, and then he became a Democrat after that and held
won in a citywide election.
Bob Walkup was the last mayor election. Candidate that won a citywide. So it's
can be done.
It's important and it can be done, but I'll tell you the primary is the primary is the only way you know who's going to get on the ballots. There are Jay Talkoff and JL Wittenbraker are running for wards 6 and ward 3 respectively on the Republican ticket. They have no opposition, so they will truly get to have a victory party, but then their work really, really begins. And we're looking forward to seeing how that turns out. If you've got the sense that you want change or make change or just send a message, you've got to get out and vote, and that's critical. So, well, Matt, we filled the air, and Mayor John Post has just sat in, and I'm going to put him almost immediately on the air. The silver button over there will let you turn up your volume so you can hear me and John, and you've done this before. You know that you need to get close to the microphone. It'll be good to go. So, Mayor Post.
Good morning. I apologize. Welcome. I apologize for my lateness.
You're making the case for RTA next. That's all you're doing.
It's a mess out there. It really is. This is a good reason to never leave Marana, right?
Well, I knew that's where it was going to go for you, and it was going to look. So if you could slide over a little bit, you'll get in our camera. You know, we're doing that new camera thing. Come over even a little more.
I wasn't dressed for a camera. Yeah. I thought this was radio.
No, it is radio. The problem is now everybody's going to the podcast, the videos. You're going to be
On
1030 The Voice YouTube's channel right now. You're on 1030 The Voice Facebook channel. Come on, you're always ready.
And here I am dressed to go look at cotton fields after we're done.
Well, that brings something up. Obviously, Ed Honey was incredibly close to both of us.
Yes,
he was Marana.
He was.
You have got elected first to the town council in 2008, and you actually became vice mayor in 2013, and you served up with him until his unfortunate passing.
You know, that's probably one of the greatest honors of my life is to serve right behind Ed Honey. I never had aspirations to be the mayor because I always just assumed that he was going to be the mayor forever. I mean, you know, when he passed and I heard he was 77, that really surprised me because I just assumed he would be mayor forever. In fact, the Tuesday night when I dropped him off at his house, he told me he was going to finish his term, which was 4 years, and then run for another 4 years. And honestly, I was very relieved because I figured, well, then I'm clear. You know, I could either stay the vice mayor or I could, you know, go do something different. And I was happy about him saying he was going to continue to do that.
Well, it's funny because I remember a conversation over a beverage. One thing I learned, and I haven't figured this out with you yet, and we're keep working on, but to really get a good conversation for me and Mayor Ed is I always take him out to like Casa Manana, or we go someplace where he could get a cold beverage. And more importantly, there were citizens of Marana because they would always come up and say, "Mayor, can I talk to you?" He'd stand. I mean, that helped him be a little bit more where I could try to convince him to do something because he was in such a good mood out amongst the people of Marana.
Well, the very first thing you said was, taking him somewhere to eat or have a beverage. He was very good at getting lunches and dinners and going out with people. He loved to do that. And, his eyesight was horrible. So he didn't drive. Yeah. He didn't drive at all. And that was his way of getting out, you know, hey, come get me. And he had friends everywhere that would go out, pick him up, take him to lunch, dinner, and that was his network. He loved it.
And to your point about his desire to continue to be the mayor in Marana, I talked to him several times going, you know, Mayor, what, you know, don't you want to slow down? I mean, you know, everything's going on. He said, Ted, you know, when I lost my wife, it's just me.
Yeah.
He goes, and being the mayor, that gives me something every day to wake up for, and I'm damn good at it.
He really was he was a mayor. I mean, that was Ed. You know, his kids live out of state, California, Nevada, and he would go see them. He had good relationship with his kids, but being the mayor was what he did, who he was, and he was very, very good at it. Very good. Yeah.
Well, we all miss him. I think of him all the time. I'll be honest. I can't have a better partner in the RTA than the role you've stepped in. I think we both are in agreement on a lot of stuff. And the thing I knew about Ed is he would always come around eventually.
Oh, yeah.
He was going to argue. He was going to defend. He wanted to emphasize Marana and the regional approach because he was a big regional approach supporter. But I knew eventually he was going to come around.
Well, if you knew Ed well, then anybody had a legendary arguments with Ed. Like there was nothing wrong with it. That was going to happen. If you were close to Ed, you would have an argument with him. And it was fine. He was fine with having,
no.
I mean, it was, no, part of the being a friend with Ed.
He swore to the end that, hey, all the arguments I've had, everybody, I still like everybody. Yeah, I get along with everybody.
Yeah,
you know, him and Mayor Romero used to say all the time, we're really good friends. Yeah. We don't agree on much, but we're really good friends.
Yeah, it was great. He was great about that. Yeah, he really was.
No, he was. So let's talk a little bit more about you. You stepped in. I mean, your first state of the state was an emotional, state of the town was an emotional event, but I thought you did an outstanding job, and you've set a path forward for Marana. Obviously, you had no choice, but other than getting involved in the RTA. But your background, you own Post Farms.
Right, right.
So, and perhaps more importantly, you own the Marana Pumpkin Patch.
So, you know, I never, like I said, I never envisioned myself being the mayor. I mean, meetings for me are generally on the tailgate of my truck or on the hood of my truck or talking to somebody on a ditch bank. And, you know, I had two or three suits, and now things are different. I meet people in a conference room. I wear a suit almost every single day, except for when I think I'm going to be on the radio. But
that's perfect.
You know,
it lets people know who you are.
You know, so things are really different for me. But at the same time, I couldn't step away. I had put my entire life. I've been volunteering in Marana since I was in my early 20s when I got out of college. And
chairman of the Planning and Zoning Committee. You've been on the board of the Quarterra Marana Irrigation District, the Quarterra Water Users, Trico Electric Co-op. You have been involved by your time and efforts throughout Marana as it's grown to what it is today.
Right, and so there was no chance of me saying, no, I couldn't do that. I needed to do that. I needed to be the mayor. Not for personal reasons, but for my community. And so I'm happy to do it. It's not where I saw my life headed. I think we all rarely do see those kind of things, but it's what I need to do, and I'm happy to do it.
Well, I know the folks in Marana, I know the chamber in Marana are grateful to have you in that role. I'm ecstatic about having you in that role because I think your vision in the RTA, and more importantly, your vision for Marana, is in alignment what I would say is best for this region. We need areas of growth, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
All right.
All right. That's the voice of Mayor John Post. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you see the real John Post. And you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Matt Neely's behind the glass. If you are a citizen of Tucson and you have not voted yet in the primary, get out and vote.
Wards 3, 5, and 6.
We talk all the time about people's rights and responsibilities in this country. We live in the greatest country. That's why everybody's still trying to get here. Yes, we've got our problems and issues, but you know what? We're still the land of opportunity. And Mayor John Post has joined me from Marana. When you took over the Post Family Farms, was that something that your family had been here? How long has your family been in Marana?
So
that
my father was actually a farm manager, so he just worked. And then I decided that I wanted to be a farmer. You know, I grew up there on the
farm. Land of opportunities.
Land of opportunities. There you go. Get out and vote. Very well said. And so I decided that I wanted to be a farmer, and I went to high school with a couple of girls, and their father owned a farm. And so when I was ready to be a farmer, he contacted me and said, hey, do you want to rent some of my farm? And, you know, I didn't have any money. I went, sat down on the steps of the bank. I know that sounds cliche or whatever you want, but I literally did. I just went down there and just hung out, talked them into loaning me some money. The first year
How old were you? At that time.
I was 22.
And you talked a banker into loaning you money so you could
start farming. Yeah. So the first year I lost $7,000, and I didn't have any money. And I lived in this house. They turned the power off. I didn't have any money to put gas in my truck, but I had some diesel left over. So I would drive a tractor, you know, down to the little market there in Marana and get some food. And you know, it was a cold winter. And I mean, this story sounds crazy, but it's true.
It does sound crazy. What was the population of Marana about that time?
You know, I ran for my first run at town council was when I was 23, and there was like 150 votes. And Herb Kai beat me by 6 votes. So it was pretty small. Marana was pretty small. And so then I talked the banker into loan.
That's incredible.
Going with me another year, and I finally made a few dollars and took off from there. I've had opportunity over the years to buy, you know, bits and pieces of farmland, and have put together some. You know, every farmer wants to own land, right? I mean, that's the business.
That's the business.
You know, and so I've been very fortunate, hard work to get to where I am today.
So obviously, in Marana, water's key.
Water's
critical. But water's what people sometimes forget is water's critical in the farming and ag community.
That's exactly right.
And they too often, I think, that farmers and at the ag industry as a whole get they don't get the respect for how important and how valuable water is to you.
Correct.
It's just, everything's flood irrigation. It's not.
So farming in most parts of Arizona is extremely difficult. It's really not economically feasible. It's starting to become almost impossible. Unless you're on the Colorado River, Yuma, Welton, there's some areas where, mm-hmm. you know, they grow a lot of vegetables and they have contracts with big companies. But for the most part, central Arizona, it's extremely difficult to farm. And so the only thing they really have left is their farm, their land, and their water. Now their water. And so people have realized, I think the governor just signed a bill, Ag to Urban.
She did.
That, you know, allows farmers to use that resource that they have to develop. And farmers truly, truly need that. So it's not, you hear a lot about farmers being greedy and selling their property and getting a lot of money, and I hope they do. But, you know, farmers doing that.
It's their livelihood.
It's their livelihood. And farmers doing that, most farmers would never sell their property. They'd farm forever. It's in their blood. It's who they are, if they didn't have to. And so, you know, when they have the opportunity, and it's a timeless tale of farmers selling their property as urban grows out to them, they sell their farm and they move on. But, you know, back to water, Marana has been very blessed to have a lot of water. We have, you know, if I were to add up all the rights, not what we use, but the right to use, I would say in the Marana Irrigation District, there's about 80,000 acre feet of rights to pump water. Now, that's not what we pump. That's not what we use, but we have rights to that amount. And, we have been, the irrigation district predates the state, so that gives us a lot of leeway legally.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been pumping that water for all those years and have never had a problem. In fact, water tables are rising in Marana, in the Marana area. And so when you think about our ability to pump.
Say that again, because I want people to hear that.
Water tables are rising in Marana. They're coming up. And so when you think about what our ability to pump is and what an acre of cotton uses or an acre of corn, housing development or an industrial development would probably use a quarter of that. So there is a net water savings to convert from agriculture to urban.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that. They assume humans, you know, it's just population growth is going to be bad. Well, it's if we want to have a higher quality of life for all, and I emphasize for all, I mean, I've been very vocal with the city that the way you're going to address crime, poverty, homelessness is to give people more opportunities.
That's right.
Well, with that, you have to have growth.
That's right. That's right. You know, and I mean, I'm jumping into a completely different subject. We can come back, but you know, that points to that Project Blue that the city is entertaining. And Marana has also been approached by one. They haven't spoken to the town council, but there's also another Project Blue in Marana. And so I'm not speaking about what's going to happen in Marana, but for Tucson, and this is just my opinion, you know, I know Mayor Romero very well. I really like her. But my opinion is it needs to happen in Tucson. Just for the simple fact, if they want everybody, they need everybody to know that Tucson is willing to do these things, you know.
Amen. And I think that's the biggest argument. And I've been criticized for saying just that this we've got to send a message that Tucson is open for business.
That's absolutely correct.
And this has gotten so much publicity.
Right.
So much noise.
And so a black eye from this, it will be hard to recover from.
Did you watch the informational session last night?
Yeah, I've watched about all I
could
take.
Okay, I agree. That's a good opportunity.
Same here.
Were you on when the representative from Beale was asked, what happens if the city of Tucson decides this project is not for them?
No, I didn't hear that.
Okay, well, he started to talk about how this is the best project you had. Of course, the crowd went crazy. We feel confident that this is the best thing for you, best thing for us. And finally, he just said, listen, the need for data centers is a reality in the future. Everybody in that place has a phone.
Yeah,
they all need the services.
Absolutely.
They just don't want it in their backyard. But he said, here's the reality. If we have to, we still know that there's demand in this region, and we'll start looking outside of the city of Tucson again.
Yeah.
So the fact of the matter is, the city of Tucson's not going to get away with it. Matter of fact, there was a follow-up question on, well, what kind of input will the city of Tucson have on the water if it's built outside of the city of Tucson? They sidestepped that. My answer would be none.
None. That's exactly right. Yeah. And so the ones that we've seen in Marana, I have not yet seen one for Project Blue. They have, like I said, they haven't talked to mayor and council, but I have seen another one that was very intriguing. They hired an architect that has won awards. You know, they really wanted to make it look really good as far as a data center can look. Walking trails, beautifully landscaped. But then, on top of that, they added a jobs component to that. They added, you know, a third of the acreage was going to go for chip manufacturing and light industrial and some education component and just things that really made us sit up and go, wow, that's what Marana needs.
That's a plan. And I think that's the way more of these data centers would benefit. So when we come back, I still want to focus on what your vision for Marana is. We'll get to the RTA. You know I'm not going to let you get off the hook that easy. So I appreciate you being here this morning, John. And that's the voice of Mayor John Post. And those of you watching on Facebook and YouTube, that's the face of John Post. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030, The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. There we have. All of a sudden, I see you point at me, Matt, and I'm going, where's no traffic, no anything, nothing. I appreciate the fact that Matt Neely's always trying to give me more airtime with my guests, because the guests really getting them talking is great. Caught me a little off guard there, Matt, but it's always good because you're the one that's keeping me on time and on target. So we've got it. So Mayor John Post is with us from the town of Marana. I live up in Oro Valley. I think I've said that to folks other time. Marana is kind of I call it the big brother or the big sister. I used to. When did Marana become a town?
1977.
So it was 5 years after Oro Valley.
Yeah.
Oro Valley was 72. Yeah. But what's going on at Marana? And Marana's done things smart in their growth and development. I mean, the fact that Marana now extends all the way down to Orange Grove and captures the Costco and that shopping area. I think the economic development that's gone on in Marana has been very well planned. Where do you see the future of that economic development going?
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier that one of my businesses is Marana Pumpkin Patch. And so my business philosophy there is to capture families for generations, right? So, you know, I when I started 15 years ago, I had mom and dad and their kids, and over time now I'm getting mom and dad as grandparents and grandkids. And so that's kind of my philosophy with Marana. I want to make sure that we add all those components that allows a family, if so desired, to continue to live in our community.
Well, can you talk a little bit about your rec and aquatic center? I mean, talk about something that's blown up.
Yeah, that has been a huge success. We've surpassed 10,000 individual members. I think when we first started talking,
do they all fit in the pool at one time?
No. We're gonna have to look at. We might have to. Figure out if we're going to allow day passes. I mean, that's a lot of people. Yep. It really is. That's far more than we ever envisioned coming there.
And it is complete now, correct?
It is complete.
You still have a half-cent sales tax, but can you talk about when Marana goes to the citizens for a sales tax? What's the philosophy and how do you work
so that? We have done that several times. We did that a number of years ago for our new police station, and we don't have to go to the voters for that. We can just do it. We can. It's just a council vote, and we can increase our sales tax. But we did go to the voters. We spent a year going around to the businesses, talking to voters, talking to our residents, making sure that they understood what we needed to do. And we built that police station. And when we opened the doors, within a year, we had it fully paid for. And then we sunsetted the half cent, which is what we told our voters we were going to do. And so when we came up with the idea of the Aquatic Center and Recreation Center and how we were going to pay for it, there has not been one single pushback from residents on how we have decided to pay for that. And that's an important aspect of how you treat your residents. You know, you need to do what you say you're going to do. And so even though we could keep that half-cent sales tax and do something else with it, we have told them, no, when the Recreation Center is paid for, we're going to sunset that, which allows us to do something else into the future.
Right.
I've always said that I think we should, that half-cent should be sacred. We should use it for recreation opportunities in our community, whether they be ball fields or other rodeo facilities or things like that. And I think if we do that and we have that trust with our voters, with our residents, I think we can always have that available for our use.
The mayor and council in Marana is truly living promises made, promises kept.
That is exactly right.
And you
right.
always say you're going to sunset, and you do. You go through the formal process of sunsetting, even if you already know what your next plan is. So the phones... For me, the phones have blown up.
Uh-oh.
So Mayor John Post comes on the radio and people want to talk. So I want to go to Cowboy Dave online.
We'll get to Cowboy Dave's because he just left the question and went up. But your caller on the line right now is Jeff.
Jeff, welcome to the Morning Voice. Appreciate you calling in and listening. And you've got Mayor John Post with you from Marana. And what question do you have for him?
Well, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. First, thanks for that first hour and that down-to-earth conversation. It was really nice to hear on the radio for a change. And actually, we are into a second down-to-earth conversation here. I had a question that covers both Marana and that Project Blue and water in general. If you're going to build Project Blue, and this is one reason I don't want to say I'm against it, but I don't understand it. Why would you build that out there up on that high ground, you know, working your way up toward Corona Day Tucson, if water's your main concern and the main stopping block, you got to build a pipeline to get the wastewater out there, 18 miles, whatever the figure is. Why wouldn't you build that call center if it's so important that it be built close to Tucson? Why wouldn't you build that out on the north side of Tucson or, dare I say it, Marana, where they actually have, dare I say it, water? They actually have wastewater, which I believe flows north from the wastewater plant in Tucson. Why would you just be so contrary to create this war over, as far as I can see, a bad idea? So I'll listen to your answer. I won't hang up because I might have a little
answer. So that's a good question. And from my understanding, this is a series of them. They need these three to operate. They don't want them right exactly close to each other. So if they put one in Marana, then they'd like to have two more a little bit of a distance away from them. And, you know, I won't even pretend to understand why, but I have been told that for their operation, that's what they need to have happen.
I think one of the reasons they selected Arizona is because the fact that we are not an area that's known for natural disasters. They want places for and it's, make sure everybody understands, data centers, not call centers. They're data centers, but they want to make a place that has a very small chance of interruption of service. So that's one of the reasons they don't want them all in the same location. So they need them spread out, because if one goes down and the other stays up. But even that, we don't have tornadoes, we don't have earthquakes, we don't have hurricanes, we don't have snowstorms. There's a lot of reasons that this is a viable city. To Jeff's question is really, In some ways, he outlined a place that says Marana is perfect. But you and I have talked before. You're open to data centers. You're definitely not going to turn away, especially one that brings other growth with it as part of the plan. But what are your thoughts on the use of water and all the assets that Marana offers?
Well, a few years ago, I had Mayor Hartke of Chandler. We had the opportunity to get together with him. We had a retreat in Chandler, and he came and welcomed us. And the subject of data centers came up, and he really was very forthright and honest with the difficulties that Chandler has had with data centers. And although they're still taking new ones in Chandler, originally they didn't have any ordinances set in place to how they were going to handle data centers. And so, you know, all the situations, the noise, because there is some noise with some of the older ones, the water use, the electricity, where they're at, where they're located. I mean, there were a lot
of... How they look.
And so Marana took that information, and our staff scoured the country looking at data centers, and we came up with a data center ordinance.
So you already have one in place.
We already have one in place.
City of Tucson's now talking about putting one in place.
Right, and they're going to look at ours. So we have a data center ordinance already in place that addresses all of these things that we're talking about. So they can't, you know, they can't use municipal water from the town of Marana. They can use it from the irrigation district. They have to come to us with a power plan already in place. We're not going to approve one that doesn't have that study done.
And that's a great one, because that's one question inside of SALC, at least we've talked about, is who's going to be the power provider if something goes into the Marana area? Because we know Trico, they really don't generate, they connect, you know. So there's that. The electricity is obviously a big issue, almost in some cases maybe a bigger issue than the water.
So my understanding is that Trico and TEP have worked to come to an agreement to, you know, share. Because some of these are in the Trico service territory, but again, they can't serve them.
No.
I mean, this is far more than their entire load. Right. And so they realize that, but, you know, service territories are gold mines, and so they've certainly come to some agreement on how they're going to serve.
Well, there's one thing with your background as in farming, in agriculture, in the town of Marana, I have very little doubt that you're not going to treat water with all the respect it deserves, because you understand it is the lifeblood of many things. Whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. I mean,
so what we're going to do, and this is just preliminary, the water will be supplied by the irrigation district, but then the outflow water after it's cleaned will go to the town. And so the town will generate credits for water that it wasn't the source of. And so it's kind of a win-win for not only the irrigation district, but for the town of Marana.
That's a great thing for the town of Marana, but we won't try to say water positive, because that was bringing some of the biggest heckles last night. We won't go there on that one.
Yeah, it won't be water positive.
So, Mayor, I've got one quick question to ask you from our caller, Jeff, earlier. From Cowboy Dave. Cowboy Dave, we talked to Jeff. You see, having all these calls, bring on the Mayor Post, and the calls come in. It's amazing. And then we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we will talk RTA. But here's the question from Cowboy Dave. Any chance of getting a Cabela's in Marana?
You know, we are working. We hit those up. We've got a list of places that, whether they're restaurants or shopping opportunities, that we regularly send information to, so that they know where we're at. We do go out and try to entice them to come to Marana. In fact, yesterday I had a great meeting with a large medical provider that went really, really well, looking to locate in Marana. People want to come to Marana. You know, it's a great place to do business. It's a great place to live. People want to come to Marana.
There's no doubt that Marana is growing, and the opportunities, and it's not just houses, it's business, it's economic opportunity, it's growth, but you're going to need some infrastructure. help
we
that
are.
Out.
We are.
So when we come back, we'll finally get to the RTA discussion and go. That's the voice of Mayor John Post with me. And you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And we're going to try to get an extra minute for the last segment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. I always love it when Matt and I are on the same wavelength. He plugs Kathleen's guest, Mark Levin, obviously a national known radio host and a new book out. Stay around at 9 o'clock. Stay with Wynn Tucson and keep listening to KVOI, your trusted local news and talk. So, Mayor Post, appreciate you joining.
Absolutely. I
always love talking about the town of Marana and what you've going on up there. We're probably going to actually talk very little about the RTA because I don't want to leave without you talking about your downtown project and what you've got going on there and what the possibilities are.
You know, I always forget to talk about it. It's going to be such an amazing project, but there's so much to talk about with Marana that I always kind of leave it out. But you know, Marana, unfortunately, our downtown is under I-10. And so Marana actually did have a downtown at one point in its history, but it was bulldozed to make way for I-10. And so unlike a lot of other communities, we have to make one. And we feel like it's really important that we do. And so a number of years ago, the town council stepped out and bought a large parcel of land around our municipal center, the Ed Honey Municipal Center. And for a long time, we've been trying to figure out what we're going to do with it. Part of that property went into the Marana Aquatic Center. But then across the street, we have come up with the idea to do what we want to people to look at, like the Fort Worth Stockyards. You know, small walkable street, no cars, brick pavers as the pathway, restaurants, breweries.
Truly a destination location.
Truly a destination location that you would go and you know, have a drink, have dinner. Ultimately, you'll have a boutique hotel there. And we have plenty of room to continue to add on to that. There's talk about having a little bull riding rink or, you know, and you could also, the nice thing about that is you could also turn it into a small concert venue. And there's a lot, there's some renderings online. I would suggest that everybody go look at them. You know, the art is really cool. We're going to do an archway that goes in there. And it just is going to be an amazing, amazing project. You know, Scott Steitler, he's done a lot in the area. We're excited to partner with him on this project. He is super excited. I don't know if you know, the enthusiasm.
I'm going to have to get him on at some point because I'm just learning more and more about this. And it is, to me, it's in the nature of Marana.
Yeah.
You're embracing the heritage of the town and not losing it. Matter of fact, you're enhancing it and saying, this is who we are.
That's right. And, you know, so Scott is, he's Corbett's. He's a lot of the downtown, the hub, some of the living areas there down. He's done a lot of stuff downtown. And so he knows what he's doing. We're excited to work with him. It's going to be a great project. Great project. And you do need to get him on your radio show. He would be great.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There's so much going on. But all this development, all this growth. So Tangerine, from coming from Oro Valley, and the fact that I head to Phoenix almost once a week for sure, sometimes more. It's Tangerine's the lifeblood.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's under construction. You're getting real close. I think you were yesterday, I might have heard you tell somebody you were waiting on ADOT's just like days away.
Every day.
So I've been waiting for you to go, okay, State Transportation Board member, can you go check into that? But you haven't done that yet, so I appreciate it.
We literally call every day. Where's that permit?
Yeah.
You know, well, it looks good. Well, what does look good mean? Does that mean tomorrow? Well, you know.
and the reality is, you look at INA, probably one of the best TIs in the region,
absolutely.
Which is regional in nature. Because as Mayor Honey used to point out all the time, is that's where everybody from everywhere else in the region gets on I-10 and comes on and joins through INA. The Twin Peaks, beautiful TI. Both RTA projects.
Yes. Yes. Those two really point to the success of RTA. They really do. I mean, you can't see those projects knowing that RTA did those and not think it was a success, because it is.
And I'd make that argument about Speedway, even about Broadway. Some people don't like how curved it is, but there are so many projects we have in this area that have improved our current roadways and facilitated continued growth and development in the areas that are made for growth and development, like Marana.
Right, right.
So bottom line, right now, July 1st of 2026, if there's nothing on the ballot in March, half cent goes away. Two-thirds, about 100, actually more than two-thirds now, about $130 million of regional transportation money goes away and leaves us with a bill and only about $500 million coming to the region. So it's significant. And I've always said the biggest losers, if that doesn't happen, is going to be the city of Tucson and Marana.
That's right.
So what's your...
So we have some... We have some
and we've
really
got about a minute and a half.
Dire needs. Like ours can't wait. And so as we go through trying to figure out how we're going to make RTA Next a reality, the problem that Marana has with anything that we talk about is we need several projects to happen almost immediately. And if Marana can't get those, and you and I have both made everybody aware that that needs to happen, like Tangerine, Moore Road.
Got a minute.
Okay. And so one of the things that I'm pushing on the RTA Next, you know,
30 seconds.
There's a lot of things happening, but Marana has dire need that I've, you know, if we can't get RTA Next, you know, my job is to make sure I produce for my residents, and I'm already trying to figure out how to do that. It's not what I want to do. RTA Next is what I want to do, but at the end of the day, I have to produce for my residents.
Appreciate you being with us today. It's up to us, those of us that serve on the RTA board, to get something to the voters, because the voters want regional transportation. We need to give them the chance to make that statement next March.
I think it's worth it.
Appreciate working with you. Appreciate who you are, and I appreciate Marana.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Listen in next week. We'll be back.